Modern smartphones are sleek and thin, but they're also fragile and expensive. If you're really careful, you may use it until you're ready to upgrade without shattering the glass. But if you look around, you'll see most phones wrapped in a case for protection. Our personal data is even more valuable than the device it's stored on, and it deserves just as much protection. The work that I do requires me to travel a lot, which means I'm frequently connected to unfamiliar networks. Nefarious hackers can make up to $1,000 selling the data of each of their victims on the dark web, and there are cheap hardware and software tools readily available that let even a smart middle schooler snatch your data without you even noticing. A virtual private network, or VPN, like ExpressVPN, creates a secure, encrypted tunnel between your devices and the servers that you're transmitting data to and from. When you're sitting at the airport gate area, or airline lounge, or even your hotel room, those Wi-Fi networks aren't secure. Your bits are flying through the air, and whether you're checking your bank account balance, sending data to a client, or just checking your email, bad actors can snatch up your usernames, passwords, and everything else you send and receive if it's not encrypted. The layers of security used by ExpressVPN would take over a billion years to expose by bad guys with some of the most powerful supercomputers. ExpressVPN trusted server technology also runs each session in memory in a unique virtual space that is wiped clean as you end your session, with none of your data ever written to a hard drive, so there's no residue for anyone to recover about what you were doing after the fact. ExpressVPN runs on almost all devices, including Windows, Mac, iOS, Linux, Android, streaming devices like Chromecast, Roku, Fire Stick, and Apple TV, and there's also a Chrome browser extension. It's super simple to use. Once you install ExpressVPN, it's one click to establish a secure encrypted tunnel with servers in 105 countries around the world. I've personally been paying for and using ExpressVPN for years on all of my personal devices. When I first started using VPNs for work more than 20 years ago, they were often slow and unstable and had to be restarted frequently. But with ExpressVPN, data speeds are virtually unchanged from running fully exposed, so you can just turn the VPN on and leave it on. I often get materials from clients and companies that are under embargo or NDA, and if it leaks out, I can get into some trouble. But even if I just wanted to reach back to my personal server to grab some files, check my email, or watch something that's only available on one of my streaming services at home while I'm out of the country, ExpressVPN lets me do it all securely. Your data is valuable. Don't let bad actors steal it and potentially misuse it. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. That's expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. And you can get an extra 3 months free when you sign up. Expressvpn.com/wheelbearings. And thanks to ExpressVPN for supporting Wheelbearings.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up on episode 224 of Wheel Bearings, the Toyota Prius Prime, the new Nissan Pathfinder, the Honda Civic Si, BMW's new XM concept, a short run for the new Toyota GR86 in Europe, and Polestar's upcoming models. All that and more coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 224 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual-Samad from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakelin from OSA New Outlet, Forbes Wheels.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from Digital Trends, all the trends that are digital.
Very good. Nicole, what have you been playing with this week?
And playing with is the right description. I have the 2022 Honda Civic Si four-door in blazing orange.
Ooh,
if ever
blazing.
A car,
I love bold colors.
Blazing orange. It is such the perfect color for this car, too. Like white, gray, black, meh. But this fun little thing, blazing orange, yes, that it fits with the kind of car this is. So this has a 1.5-liter turbocharged four-cylinder. It's 200 horsepower and, you guys, six-speed manual transmission. Yay! So it's fun to get to drive a manual because I think I maybe get like half a dozen of those over the course of a year because nobody drives them anymore because the world is a sad, sad place. But I love having a car with a manual transmission. So this is super fun. 200 horsepower doesn't sound like a lot. This is a small car. This isn't some great big SUV. It's a relatively small little car. Very fun to drive. It has a series of modes that you can change. When you put it in sport mode, you can feel everything sort of hunker down and get heavy, and it sounds amazing. It's a little bit of a head turner. You know, this is a sedan, right? So sedans aren't normally the kind of car that people generally look at unless they're like outrageously expensive and just ooze money and luxury as you drive down the road. But this attracted some attention. People like this one. It has really nice interior details. I like how they styled it. You know, it has like sports seats. Say SI is like embroidered sort of on the headrest. There's a sort of honeycomb pattern that goes across the dashboard that gives it a little personality. Although my daughter said she thinks it looks silly. I don't know why. She just doesn't like honeybees, I guess. But I'm like, I like the little honeycomb thing. She's like, I don't like it. I'm like, but it looks cool. She's like, no, it doesn't. So I guess if you're 17, honeycomb, not cool. If you're my age, honeycomb, super cool. Very fun to drive this. It has, it's, you know, when you're driving a manual transmission, there's always that moment, like, you know how to drive one, but it takes you a little time to figure out exactly the right point for the clutch on every one. So you spend the first half hour in the car, like, okay, wait, am I going to stall this? Like I've never driven before. This is very quick, very, very quickly. You get the hang of this one. Super easy. Very nice, light clutch. I got stuck in stop and go traffic because there was an accident, which is like the worst because you're constantly off and on and off and on and off and on. And you feel like your left leg is getting a workout. That is not fun, but this is a light enough clutch. It's still a sporty car, but not one of those where the clutch is so heavy that you feel like it's annoying anytime you're stuck in any kind of traffic. Handles just as beautifully as you would expect. If you want to take this on really, like, we have a section of highway where there's this huge swooping on-ramp, and you can get going pretty fast on it because you're getting up to highway speeds. You can take it a heck of a lot faster than the law would probably allow me to take to get onto the highway, and it just stays so controlled and so planted. You always feel very in control. The only drawback to the drive, and this is something that I mentioned driving the Hyundai, the N's the other week, the Elantra and the Kona, that it's harsh. You know, it's that time of year where we've started to get a little, you know, the frost heaves, which I guess some people don't know what that is. The ice freezes under the road. It makes bumps that your car goes kaboom over because it expands. We're starting to get some of that. So the roads aren't as great. They're never great. They're not. They're worse than normal. they're never bumpier. Great.
Welcome to life in Michigan where we have frost heaves year round.
Yeah, it's kind of, yeah. I mean, it's not that much better here. So, but you do feel that. So if you're, you know, if you aren't aware of what the road is in front of you, if you aren't really cognizant of like, oh, I got to watch that. There's a bit of a pothole. There's a frost heave there. The pavement's just a little bit broken. You do feel it. So it can be a little bit harsh, but it's not so harsh that it's going to rattle your, you know, fillings out of your teeth. It's just something that you will notice. Relatively roomy, compact car. Like I said, my daughter's 17. My husband is 6'3". He sat in the front seat. She sat in the back seat and her knees weren't pushed up to her chest. She had enough room. I don't necessarily think I'd put five people in this car, but four people would be just fine. And I think even as a cruiser, you know, like I said, driving around town, you feel that harshness because they're city streets and, you know, country roads, and they can get kind of torn up. Driving on the highway, which by and large, most highways are pretty smooth. I don't know, maybe not in Michigan, Sam. The rest of the world, highways are pretty smooth. So you don't really care about the ride being a bit more harsh because the pavement's so smooth anyway. And what you do just get is this really nice, controlled drive. It's very aggressive. If you need the power to pass someone who's going just a little bit too slow, you just want to go a little bit faster and you're already, you know, going 55, 60 miles an hour, there's enough power that you can easily say, okay, no problem. I'm going to pass this guy and get around him. And it is, the handling is so good that it makes it kind of fun to drive in rush hour traffic. You know, if you're trying to get in and out and go between smaller, slower cars and faster cars, if you don't have something that handles well, you can't really do that. You're sort of stuck because you don't have the handling combined with the power to do that. You can go, you know, you can make some serious progress passing other cars, getting around people, and it feels so well-mannered and it's fun. It's just an incredibly fun car to drive. And, you know, blazing orange, love this color. So overall, I like it. As far as price on this, you guys, there's no price on my Monroney, so I'm going to have to look it up. All it tells me is that that blazing orange paint costs $395. That is literally the only number that is on here.
That's not so bad.
Did you have the HPT?
Yes, I did. Do you have it in front of you, Sam?
Yeah, so that one starts at $27,895. I think that's not including the delivery charge. So it's $1,000. So $29,000. Just shy of $29,000.
Let's say $29,000. So for $29,000 and the EPA estimated fuel economy combined is 31. That's not bad. You know, you get a lot of car for that price. You can spend less, but it's not as fun. It feels like it should cost a little bit more than that. Honestly, when you say that number, Sam, I was like, oh, I was expecting it to creep over 30 just because of how sporty it is. Now, maybe that's partly because like the one I have, and it doesn't look like it has, again, I don't have pricing, but it doesn't look like there's a lot added on other than the fact that there's that premium exterior color. So you are coming in under 30. It doesn't have like power seats and leather and, you know, hand tooled by happy little artisans, you know, wood trim or whatever. So you don't have some of that stuff for that price. But, you know, as a hot little sedan to drive around, especially if you're a bit younger and you're on a budget and you don't need a huge amount of space in a trunk, you don't need all that, you know, extra utility of buying a crossover, I would get this. It's fun. I like it. Thumbs up.
So I haven't driven the regular 22 Civic yet. So I don't have a point of reference. Have you driven the standard version yet?
Yes, I believe I did, but it's been a little while ago. I don't remember. My memory is that this definitely has a sportier vibe to it. You can feel that sportiness to it. I like the Civic. I've been a longtime fan of the Civic, though. I mean, styling and things have changed over the years, but I've always felt like the Civic has been a pretty solid option. I owned a couple of Civics back in the day, so I clearly like them. I find, you know, Honda makes a good, reliable car. They're consistently reliable. They consistently have a good resale value. That hasn't changed regardless, you know, of the model year. You know, pretty much it's always, you can count on that with Honda. And I feel like the current Civic, the 22, does the same thing. And this one just gives you that extra little bit of sport. I feel like this is the kind of car that you're going to see, like it's just coming out now. I think it's literally just hitting dealerships, the SI. And I feel like next summer when I drive by the little local car show in our Target parking lot, I'm going to see some of these with unnecessary spoilers and, you know, new wheels and, you know, all sorts of lights underneath. And I can't wait.
Yeah. Looking at the specs, the SI only has 20 horsepower more than the standard Civic with the 1.5 liter turbo. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if you can get that one with if you can get the 1.5 turbo with a manual apart from the Civic, or apart from the
SI.
From the SI? Good question. I don't know.
I know they have the Sport, which has the 2 liter, the older 2 liter naturally aspirated engine, which is only 156 horsepower. But the SI, the regular version of that 1.5, you know, is also a really nice engine. And I remember the previous generation, I drove the SI and, you know, we own a 2017 Civic with that 1.5 turbo in there. And I found that, you know, the extra 20 horsepower or so that you get with the SI didn't really make it feel a whole lot quicker. Obviously, the sportier suspension does make a difference, but it also, you pay a price in ride quality. And so, yes, you know, when you live somewhere like Michigan or New Hampshire, you know, that can be a challenge. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why we opted to go with the standard, you know, with a Civic EX instead of getting one of the, a touring model or the SI with the larger wheels. You know, the EX that we have is on 17-inch alloys, whereas, the touring, or the sport touring, and even the base sport that they had in the previous generation, came with 18-inch wheels, lower profile tires. And, I've had to replace a couple of wheels over the years and multiple tires over the years that get damaged from potholes and frost heaves. So that's definitely something to consider. If you live somewhere where the road conditions, at least part of the year, are not very good.
Well, and Sam, I actually just dug into Honda's site and pulled up the specs for the 2022 Civic in general. And you said you have what? There's like, if you're in the EX or Touring, you're looking at 180 horsepower. But if you step down to the LX or the Sport, it's 158.
Right, because they have a naturally aspirated 2-liter four cylinder.
Right, so you'll get a bigger jump. I mean, there's a small jump between the top two trims, a larger jump between the lower ones. But also, from what I'm seeing as I'm skating down the sheet, you get two different CVTs, but you get CVTs. Okay. I don't see a manual transmission available on this. And if you're either on the Sport or the Touring, you get little paddle shifters, so you can play around a little bit, but you're only going to get a manual transmission, it looks like.
So it looks like the manual's only on the SI now.
Yes, and I don't know about that. There's also the Type R, right? Isn't there?
Yeah, the Type R is coming in the spring, I think.
Yeah, sometime in 2022. Right, so probably that too, but not yet.
Right. That'll definitely have a manual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those will be your two options if you like a manual.
I drove the Touring SI in November for a little while. And it's nice, as a CV. It's a Honda Civic, and that's the thing, is you get into a Honda and you close the door, and it has a nice, satisfying thud that you get. It's dump. You're like, oh, yeah, this feels like a car that's built by, master craftsmen. You're not getting this luxury interior, but instead you're getting this incredible build quality. They typically handle a little bit better than their class, even when you're looking at the Touring. I remember the Type R, last generation, that transmission was amazing. The transmission and clutch were just probably
perfect.
Probably the best on the market. I drove the Touring, and it's nice. You're looking for a nice sedan that is going to last for 7,000 years that you'll be able to turn around and sell for like $3 less than what you bought it for. When I bought a used 1990 Honda Civic DX hatchback in 1992. I bought it from the school psychologist. But she ended up selling it to me for like a really, really great deal. And when I went to get the loan from the people were like, oh, you sure you're paying this much? I'm like, yeah. They're like, it's weird. This car is worth more now than it was new. This was in the early 90s. And yeah, that car, it was bulletproof. It was just a bulletproof car. And they just continue to make these very bulletproof vehicles. And you can't go wrong with the Honda Civic is what it comes down to.
Yeah. So I just checked in the Civic with the hatchback. If you get the hatchback, the Civic Sport is available with a manual.
Ah, there you go.
But only, again, with that 2-liter engine, the 158 horsepower engine. So you can't get the Civic Sport with the 1.5 turbo and a manual, which is unfortunate. So if you want the turbo and the manual, you got to go SI.
That's where the manuals are anyway. Most of the time, they're only on the enthusiast vehicles.
You can get the Civic Sport Touring. So that's the top trim level in the hatchback with the 180 horsepower engine and the manual. So that's kind of the closest equivalent to an SI with the hatchback. And the advantage with the hatchback, and this is one of the reasons why we bought a hatch instead of a sedan, is you get that huge opening in the back and lots of cargo area. I mean, the Civic sedan has got a decent sized trunk, but any of these modern coupe-like sedans, fastback design sedans like the Civic and pretty much everything else, they have a relatively small trunk opening. So if you want to put big stuff in the back, you know, something you find at a yard sale or an estate sale or, you know, all your Costco stuff, you know, it's a hassle to get it through that trunk opening. And with the hatchback, you get a big trunk opening. You can fold the back seat down. You have a huge amount of cargo space back there. It's kind of like having an SUV, but in a car. And, you know, it's way more practical than the sedan.
Yeah, I loved my hatchback. That was a great car. I shouldn't have sold it. I'm still, like, kind of sad I sold that thing.
Well, you know, we've had the Civic for over 4.5 years. It's going to be 5 years in April. And the only thing I've had to do to it is oil changes and tire rotations, you know, basically once a year because my wife only drives about 8,000 miles a year. You know,
wow.
That's all I've had to do to it. Nothing else is, you know, and replacing an air filter. Yeah. So
it's just
everything else is perfect.
Bulletproof.
Yep.
Bulletproof car.
All right. Roberto, what about you?
This week I was driving the Nissan Pathfinder, which I'm pretty sure you both have already driven, correct?
Yeah.
Yes.
Nicole really liked it.
I like the Pathfinder.
I feel like it's a nice upgrade from what we had before. I think there's, but I'm also the person who remembers when the Pathfinder came out, and it was like a forerunner. It was like an off-road machine, and now it's
a real
like
SUV. A big.
Now it's like a Chevy Tahoe. Now it's just, you know, that's what it feels like. But it is much nicer than it was before. It's comfortable. We drove it around. We went and picked up some very heavy cement turtle. We picked up a very heavy cement turtle
cement turtle. What happened to mulch, Robbie? We needed
the turtle.
It's heavier than mulch.
Does like water spout out of the cement turtle?
No, it's
or
like two sections of a turtle, and then it has a thing where you're supposed to put a bench. It's very old. We found it like at an antique place that my wife really enjoys.
Now I'm trying to figure out the
and
cement
then just
turtle.
Toss
so
them
I will
in the
require,
back.
I will require a picture of said cement turtle
I will send you a picture of the cement turtle. anyway, so yeah, we picked up a very heavy thing with it. It was no problem. It's very nice. It's very comfortable. Everything is where it should be. The infotainment system is fine, which is, you know, almost high praise at this point for most infotainment systems. You're like, well, that's good enough. That's fine. Yeah, it's so I didn't get a Monroney with this. I don't know why. It's very weird. But the starting price for the Pathfinder is $33,680. This one, I have the SL all-wheel drive, which if you're going to get a big truck, if you live anywhere that's not L.A., and you plan on doing anything that involves snow or rain or inclement weather or dirt, you might want to opt for that. Well, I got the SL four-wheel drive. It starts at $41,840. It is it's very nice. It's here. It's steering wheel. It has Nissan's what do you call it? Their drive assist technology. It's got some
ProPilot.
It was ProPilot, but then for the United States, they renamed it ProPilot Assist. I remember that was a big deal because autopilot was getting so much, you know, guff for not actually being autopilot. Even though people were like, "Oh no," but you know, on a plane, no. It doesn't matter what's on the technical term for autopilot. What the human race understands autopilot as is something that does itself. It does it
humanity.
By itself. Humanity
has decided.
Don't get off.
To think I played a small part in that rebranding because back in. I think it was about 2017 or so at CES, Carlos Ghosn did a keynote there and he talked extensively about ProPilot and kept referring to it as autonomous.
Oof.
It is way
not it is not autonomous.
Not even
nothing.
Remotely close. The following week, you know, this was when the Detroit Auto Show came the week right after CES. He did a speech there. And you know, said basically the same thing. And I went to one of the PR people at Nissan and said, "Look, guys, you got to stop calling. You got to tell him to stop calling this autonomous because it's wrong. It's not autonomous." He agreed that we got to stop doing that. And 5 months later, when they actually did the first demo drives of Copilot for the US market, You know, they said, you know, that's when they officially started branding it as ProPilot Assist.
ProPilot Assist. Yeah.
Good job, Sam.
Good job. You know, when it came out, it was actually a few years ago, it was actually like one of the best in the market. Now it feels a little like it hasn't been upgraded all that much when it comes to lane centering. It feels a little little jagged a little bit as it's turning and stuff. Just a scooch. It's not as smooth as other systems on the market along the same roads that I drive with those systems. But no, it works fine. It doesn't do any like insane, you know. I remember earlier systems, whenever a car would move out of the way, the car would just take off, like, it slammed the accelerator down.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
The adaptive cruiser, like, whoa.
Hold on.
So, yeah, it doesn't do that. Like, cut-ins, it handles cut-ins really well. But, you know, the lane centering is, you know, it still works. It's, you know, but it feels just a little bit more jagged than some of the other stuff. I still think, you know, if you're someone who commutes on a daily basis, you're gonna probably want to get the ProPilot Assist because it's standard on this vehicle, but you know it's just a little extra something to kind of help you when you after a long day of work and your brain's already messed and fried and now you got to drive home. Yes, you still have to pay attention. But yeah, it does a good job. This vehicle gets, that was the worst segue ever. where is so it's combined is 23. It's pretty big car for 23. I wish it was better. I always wish these large vehicles, they could get, but you know, you're essentially driving a billboard. They're all big and flat. And, if we've learned anything is that automakers can make cars that have a lower drag coefficient because of, EVs, but they just, sometimes don't. They just, whatever. This is what people want. This is what it looks like. Suck it.
Yeah.
Is that the new tagline, Nissan Pathfinder? Suck it.
No, I think it's just like... all the big cars. I mean, anything that's like, you know, the Ford Bronco, why isn't that a hybrid when it first, you know, this first year? I know why. I know marketing. I know reasoning. They're like, oh, we'll send a bunch of gas ones, and then next year we'll show the hybrid, and then we can sell a bunch of those. And, you know, okay, I get it. I understand. But at the same time, 23 miles is, you know, for a big car like that, it's fine, but it's also...
Hey, it's better than that Tahoe I was driving last week that got about
What
12.
Was the Tahoe? Like 17? Oh, 12.
It's rated at 17, but it got about 12.
I drove it it's been mostly on the highway with a few things and picking up giant concrete turtles. And I think my combined is about, I'm trying, my brain... 21 point. I just say 22. So 22. So it's pretty on par with what you would expect. It is a very nice, comfortable vehicle. There's lots of room. I have not tried to sit in the third row. I typically don't do that much anymore just because it just don't fit. And I look back there and I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to fit. So, you know, most third rows are still for tiny children. I think, you know, Nissan, you know, after years of just sort of being out in the wilderness, they're still like battling their way back, and I think this Pathfinder is a good sign of what's to come from the automaker. So good on them for the $841 Pathfinder SL. I'm sure the one I have costs more, but I don't know.
I mean,
I don't know.
it is a huge improvement over the old one, which, you know, was kind of... Yeah, it was kind of dull to look at, and
it was dull and janky. Yeah.
I think this one looks so much better. I know people always say like I'm really into looks of a car, but you look at it all the time. You see it sitting in your driveway. You're sitting in the seat, looking at it. You're looking at that thing all the time, and this one does look better.
It does.
I love
look
how
nicer.
They've done the way they do the spacing now for the letters on the back. Like instead of Pathfinder all close together, there's a word for what that's called, and I've
the kerning.
Yeah.
The kerning of the letters.
Kerning, is that what it, kerning of the, I like the kerning of the letters.
Kerning or leading. That's horrible. I have a design degree and I had like take classes in typography and I can't remember if it's kerning or leading. Anyway,
They space out the letters.
Then I'm just going to go with my business major thing. The way they space the letters looks cool. There we go.
Yeah. It does look very nice. Yeah. It doesn't look, I feel like a lot of people are making their names so large that it looks out of place on a vehicle when it comes to to branding. But no, actually, it looks nice. It fits well with the back of the vehicle. So,
yeah, I think, you know, one of the best things about this new Pathfinder and also the Infiniti QX60 is if you are going to use those third rows, the way that they've set up the second row seats, so they pivot from the front. So when you release it to get into the third row, it's not just the seat folding down and then sliding forward. The whole seat, the rear seat, the second row seat back stays in place, and the whole thing just tilts up and forward. So if you have, you know, car seats in those second rows, you don't have to take out the car seat. You can leave the car seat in place, and the whole thing just tips forward, and you actually have pretty good access to that third row. I have climbed into that third row, and you know, it's not somewhere I would want to take a long road trip, but you know. Going across town, you know, even, you know, going, you know, a half hour drive, you know, I can sit in there comfortably. You know, I have enough headroom and enough knee room that, you know, I can reasonably sit in there, you know, to, if you've got, you know, three couples going out to dinner or something, I can take the last you can, row.
You can put
not a big
regular sized people in the back for short distances.
And you're second.
We're going into the steakhouse. Yeah.
That notion that the seat, the way that it moves, like that it doesn't just move forward, like the tip and slide thing, not having to remove a car seat. I remember that being such a colossal pain in the butt when my kids were little, that if you needed to get anything, get an adult in the back or even just get another kid into the back, that you had, it was like, okay, I got to take this car seat out. I got to hold the car seat. Timmy, climb in the back of the car, get in, go, okay, put the car seat back in the car. It was a hassle. It doesn't sound like a big deal until you're a parent. And suddenly you're balancing a kid in one arm and a giant car seat in the other because you can't do both. To just be able to like do that and let the kids hop in back, and if they can buckle or buckle them in, oh my gosh, that is such a cool feature. It's one of those things I look at now and I'm like, why did nobody do this years ago? Because this is super cool.
It's like one of those chairs that you get when you have difficulty standing up. They have chairs
that lifts
like
you
that.
Right up.
That lifts you up. Yeah, it's like that, except for. So you don't have to like fight with car seats and stuff or anything you have in that seat. It's just sort of like almost like an ejector chair. It's like, woo.
All right. Speaking of good looks, I had a car that lacks that.
No, it's the sexiest of cars. How can you say that, Sam?
maybe to an alien from another planet. I'm not aware of any earthborn humans that would consider it that. But
no,
it is the 2022 Toyota Prius Prime, which is an outstanding vehicle for fuel economy and efficiency. It is, as Priuses have been, for more than two decades, it is remarkably efficient. I cannot argue with that, and. In this current generation of the Prius, and particularly the Prius Prime, it's also really hard to look at. I have never, the current gen Prius, the platform that they put it on, the new platform that it's on, is way better to drive than any of the previous generations of Prius. I remember, a decade or so ago, driving the first generation Prius plug-in hybrid that was based off the third gen Prius. So this was like 2010, 2011 timeframe. And that car had a relatively small battery for a plug-in hybrid. And nominally, they said it could go 11 miles on electricity, but it didn't really have enough electrical power to drive on electricity alone. So it was always kind of blended. And that thing just felt so leaden and dull. This one doesn't. It's got the same platform architecture that's used for the current Corolla and the Camry, and it's actually quite pleasant to drive in that respect. It's got decent driving dynamics and decent steering and everything. If you can get past the weird looks of this thing, particularly the Prime takes the standard Prius, and kind of exaggerates some of the stuff. It's got some weird elements like the rear hatch. The glass in the rear hatch is actually it's a compound curve, and you can see it a little bit when you're looking out the rearview mirror. You can see just a little bit of distortion there. It's not too bad, but it's kind of peculiar looking. the Prime, you know, adds a bigger battery to the Prius, and it's nominally rated at 25 miles of electric driving range, which is not bad. You know, it's not great. You know, if you want a Toyota plug-in hybrid and actually want to use, you know, do more electric driving with it, I would definitely recommend the RAV4 Prime over this thing.
The RAV4 Prime.
And it looks so much better.
Everything about the RAV4 Prime is better than the Prius Prime.
You can easily get 40 miles of electric driving, you know, on a charge with the RAV4. This one, you get 25. I had to go somewhere, you know, that was a highway drive the other day, and I got about 22 miles driving on the highway before
the
engine came out. Yeah, that's so it's better than I expected. You know, around town, you can probably do closer to about 27, maybe 28 miles, which is what I've done the previous time I've had a Prius Prime. The other main differences from the standard Prius are the infotainment system. Yeah. One thing to, you know, all Priuses, Prime or otherwise, still have that center-mounted, long, narrow cluster. And so instead of the gauges being in front of you where they belong, they're off to one side in the middle of the dashboard, which I've always thought was a little bizarre.
Wrong. It's a little wrong is what
yes.
it is.
And so they're still there. The Prime has a bigger infotainment display. I think it's an 11-inch. 10 or 11 inch display, and it's a portrait orientation display as opposed to the smaller landscape display that's in the regular Priuses. It's still an older version, using an older version of Toyota's Entune infotainment system, but with a unique interface that is not like any other Toyota. It does not have support for Android Auto. It does support Apple CarPlay, but it doesn't support Android Auto. They never updated this. I think partly because the Prius, you know, is reaching the end of its current model life cycle, they decided it wasn't worth. And also sales of Priuses have been declining for a number of years now. They probably felt it wasn't worth the investment to make the upgrade to add Android Auto compatibility to it, so it's CarPlay only. The one I have is the limited trim, so it actually does have a heads-up display. So even though the instruments are off to one side, you know, the stuff you really need is out in front of you anyway. So not that big a deal. The front seats are heated and trimmed in Softex, which is Toyota's branding for their faux leather. It's fine. I wouldn't call it luxurious, but it's got the usual array of driver assist features that you'll find standard on increasing number of cars, but especially on all Toyotas now. So it's got radar adaptive cruise control, lane keeping assist. They actually call it lane tracing assist. Blind spot monitoring, departure alert, all the usual stuff. So that's good. When it's operating in hybrid mode, once you've depleted the battery, and it's operating in hybrid mode, it's rated at 54 miles per gallon. Right now, the car I'm driving is showing an overall average since I started. I reset it when I started. It's showing an overall average of about 80 miles per gallon because a significant portion of that was on electricity alone. And it calculates it based on total miles divided, total miles divided by the number of gallons you've used. And for, you know, a decent chunk of that, there was no gallons used. So the Prius Prime, it's eligible for, I think it's a $4,500 federal tax credit because it's a plug-in hybrid. The one that I'm driving, as I said, is the Limited, and it prices out, $35,284. So after the tax credit, you're looking about 31 grand for this. Get about 25 miles of electric range, and if the sight of a Prius doesn't make you want to hurl, then
it's such a long
it's a good deal. It's roomy enough.
it's never been a pretty car. And then and everyone talks about how it's not pretty, and they're like, whatever.
Yeah.
I just like to always like, whatever. We're going to make it the way it is, and you're going to buy it. And for years, that's exactly what happened, is we're going to make it the way it is. It has this really nice hybrid system, and you're going to buy it anyway. And people did. And so, you know, I guess kudos.
Yeah. I think the biggest problem that Toyota's got now is they've got really good hybrid, same really good hybrid drive system in most of the vehicles they sell. And so, you know, if you want Prius fuel economy, you no longer need to tolerate the way the Prius looks. And, nearly a quarter of RAV4s sold now are hybrids. And, you know, the RAV4 is really Toyota's best-selling vehicle. And that's in the U.S. In Europe, it's almost 55% of RAV4 sales in Europe are hybrids now.
Yeah, the RAV4 is.
Wow. Yeah, and you can get the same powertrain that's in the Prius. You can get that in a Corolla. You can get basically the same thing in the Camry. You can get it in a Highlander and a Sienna.
And they all look 100% better.
Yeah, so there's not a lot of reason to buy a Prius anymore, and Prius sales have been declining steadily for several years now. And we'll see if they bring out a new generation of Prius or not. I don't know that there's really a reason for the Prius to exist anymore.
Oh, you think they get rid of it? I mean, isn't that, like, how could you?
They should make the Prius their new convertible lineup. It's just like, just throw everyone off. Just like, now a Prius is a convertible. You're like, wait, what? They're like, yeah.
It's going to be like the new Prius will be something like Mazda, like the Miata, tiny little two-door, two-person, little sporty.
It'll be a little plug-in hybrid with like 40 miles of range, and you're like, whee!
No, the GR86 will be rebranded to be their new hybrid. No.
Oh, you can't do the GR86. Oh, so I have a question. When you back up in this this version of the Prius, does the inside the car for no reason? Okay,
because it used to
not inside
stupidest
anymore.
Feature.
Yeah, it used to. It doesn't anymore.
That has to be like, what did anybody say? I feel like you always ask interesting questions when you talk to. Did anybody ever say, well, the reason we did this was? Like, oops, I forgot I put my car in reverse.
It was such a weird.
Why?
I had to shoot I shot a video with the Prius Prime when it first came out. And I'm like, it's not just me, right? This is inside the car. We closed the car. And it's like not outside. Like, I'm like, see?
Yeah. It's like the horror movie. It's like the call is coming from inside the building. The beep is coming from inside the car.
Our friends bought one, and they bought a Prius Prime. And, they liked it for its fuel economy, but they said it just drove like bleh. And the backing up thing was just driving them. They sold it and got an Outback, and they're like, "Ah,
the hell with this." Didn't believe me. She thought I was lying. It was just a friend.
It seems like you would lie about that.
So I get back in the car, and I'm like, I just like did a quick video. And I shot her. I videoed. I'm like, here you go. In the car, put the car in reverse. Listen, beep, beep, beep. There you go.
Yep. No, it doesn't do the beep. In fact, I don't think it doesn't even do the beep beep on the outside anymore. I don't think.
That's so weird.
I'll double check that, but it definitely doesn't do it inside the car. So now you have to, your only indication that you're in reverse is that you see that fuzzy image from the rear backup camera on the display. That's another thing that the quality of the backup camera in the Prius, especially compared to so many modern cars now, have a really sharp, crisp, high resolution display from the backup camera. And the Prius, You've probably heard about people complain about the webcams on Apple MacBooks, how terrible they are.
Yeah.
This is worse. I mean, it's really bad. I mean, you can see what's there, but just barely. It's not a good camera.
So we should have a new Prius in 2 years?
I would say if there's going to be one coming, it'll probably be within the next 2 years, yeah. Because I think the current one came out in 2015.
So, yeah, that sounds.
It's a pretty
long cycle life.
Yeah, we should have a new Prius, and hopefully it'll have Android Auto for those who use Android, and it'll have a backup camera that's not from a Droid a smartphone from 10 years ago.
You mean from one of these?
Droid. Yeah, exactly. From one of those. Droid. With the little flop out. Slide up display with the little physical keyboard underneath. That is weird. Like, where does the Prius go after after being what it was, and now everything is what it was. All the technology that made the Prius has now permeated the rest of the Toyota lineup. So now what?
And, you know, it's not like you can really transition to EVs because you've already got those coming too. You know, and they've got different branding, the BZ branding for their EVs. So what do you do with Prius?
Should have kept it. They should have just kept the Prius. They should have made the Prius always the next generation vehicle. The Prius would be the next EV. The Prius would be the next, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Mirai, the Prius could have transitioned to being the fuel cell car. You know, instead of Mirai, they could have called it Prius.
Mirai looks so much better than the Prius, though.
Yeah.
The Mirai is so much nicer than the Prius, both inside and out and comfort wise. And I mean, you can't drive it anywhere, but when you can, it's really great.
Okay. Let's see. What have we got on the. Last week, after we stopped recording, news came out about the BMW XM, and we talked about that at some length. But we didn't record that. So, what do you think of the XM? Well, first, what is the XM?
Isn't it a radio station? No.
So Sirius and XM merged a few years ago, and so the XM. So I went down to LA, and I went into a little room where they took my phone and my camera and all that. And they showed me the BMW XM. And the XM is the second M-only car that BMW's M division has ever created. There was the M1 back 50 years ago, and now the XM. M1 was this nice like sedan, sport car, boom. The XM is a very large SUV. See, there's the well, it doesn't have the vroom because it's, it does have the vroom. What am I talking about? It's a plug-in hybrid. It is it does have vroom. It's a very large SUV, and it has a they want it to be a more expressive luxury in cars, and so they went bonkers on the XM.
That's one way of putting it.
Yes, it is very much like almost like paper craft, like this like
origami.
Like sort of origami. Yeah, it's got this very these sharp edges all around it on the outside. It has the giant grill as you would expect from BMW because they don't care what anyone says. They're sticking with the giant grill. Yes. What's nice is that it the grill itself. The outline, it lights up. So you can have a giant grill coming at you. It kind of looks like two butts
and
floating in the air.
And then light it up to make sure nobody misses it.
Even in the dark, you can't forget how big that grill is.
You cannot forget how large the BMW XM's grill is.
And yet, as weird and as unique, as different, as in your face and origami-like as it is on the outside, the inside. Outside look calm.
they're giving us the presentation and they say the internal code name for this car was Rockstar, and that was essentially their North Star. That was their guiding light. So the front of the vehicle has this very plush brown leather. It feels very much like something Steven Tyler would wear. While singing Dream On in front of thousands and thousands of people. Then the back seat is so the front seat is like the stage. That's where the performance happens. These are things that BMW told me. The back seat is the back.
I love how you clarify.
It's the backstage. And when they
this
tell
is
you
their
that,
rationalization for it.
Yeah. So when they told me all that, I'm like, oh, that makes all the sense in the world. It makes perfect sense when you put it into that context that it's front stage and backstage. The backstage has velvet, like the rear seat.
It's velvet. It's a car
it's like
that's
a blue velvet.
What
and
is
then
happening?
The seats are blue. The floor is green-ish. The top has a very almost like, again, like paper craft, but like peaks and valleys. And then has lights that come in from the side, and the lights change colors. So it's like this little artsy-fartsy thing that's going on. And I call it, in my article on TechCrunch,
yes.
Hold on. It's David Lee Roth on four wheels. David Lee Roth, for those who are not unaware, was the lead singer of Van Halen back in the day, back when they were awesome. Not when they had Sammy Hagar, when they were lame, but back when they were awesome. David Lee Roth is a very larger-than-life individual. He is essentially the epitome of an 80s rock star. He would come out. He would do, like karate kicks. He had long, curly hair. He would essentially, like, if he make love to the camera while singing, he is the quintessential 80s rock star. That is exactly what they built. I'm sure they just had a big poster of David Lee Roth in Germany, and they're like, how do we make this? And they're like,
I think it's Russell Brand.
I called the back seat the Russell Brand's lounge.
Okay, like so Brand's then we're bedroom. On the same page. I'm like, yeah. All I could think of was like, this is what Russell Brand's house would look like if we all went inside his house. Yeah. This is Russell. It's the Russell Brand of cars. So the back seat's Russell. Wow, we actually thought the same thing. See,
yeah. So yeah.
So that poster was right next to David Lee Roth.
Yes.
In Germany, like right there.
The thing is, Russell Brand isn't really a rock star.
He's like weird, kind of smarmy, kind of like stringy.
He's
black
got
hair.
All the rock star stuff, but the actual street cred of singing and performing and. Rockstar,
which is kind of like this car. It has all the rock star stuff, but does it have any rock star street cred? Not really. So there we go. We've reinforced the Russell Brandishness of the XM.
So it has a V8. It's a V8 with a hybrid. It has where are my numbers? Here we go. It has a plug-in hybrid, and it puts out 750 horsepower, 737 pound-feet of torque. It has. It's going to have an EV-only range. They're targeting 30 miles EPA range of EV, which is better than the Prius Prime. So better than the Prius Prime, more powerful than the Prius Prime, and more insane than anything else that's on the road. And they really wanted something for people who are extroverts, people who are like, look at me. You know, the fellas that drive the Lamborghini to the club. But they never actually take it to the track or outside of L.A. You know, it's always driving under 60 miles an hour. So those folks, but they want more legroom. When I asked about cross-shopping, like, what is the person who's buying this? What else are they looking at? And they're like, well, they're not really looking at, like cross-shop as you would, like, you know, a CR-V versus a RAV4. They're looking at these very larger-than-life vehicles. So they were talking about the Urus, and they talked about the G-Wagon. So they essentially looked at those two cars and like, hold my beer, and they just went the next level. They just went for it.
And so it looks to me, you know, looking at this thing, like they contracted out the design to Mansory.
Maybe.
I mean, I talked
to the designer.
This is the impression I get is that, or at least they took strong inspiration from, you know, the vehicles that Mansory builds. And for those not familiar with Mansory. You know, back when there was still a Geneva Auto Show, you know, this, I think they're Swiss, if I'm not mistaken. You know,
probably.
They take, you know, vehicles from other companies and they customize them.
They pimp their rides.
Yeah, they pimp the rides.
They really, really pimp the rides.
Oh, boy, do they
pimp
the rides.
All sorts of crazy. Do they ever pimp the rides?
Yeah. And this looks like something that Mansory would have created.
It does. Yeah. You're right.
That sounds about right.
And you know, this is coming as, you know, a production version of this is coming about a year from now. It's supposed to, you know, go into production late 2022 at BMW's Spartanburg plant. First of all, size-wise, you know, where does this fit relative to like the X5 and the X7? And, you know, how much of this do you expect is going to carry over to the production model? I think clearly the body shape is probably going to be pretty much carryover, but how much of this interior design
told me that overall it's 90% of what we'll see in production. It's pretty much there.
90%.
There's a few things that they had these dark glass over the license plate and stuff. They're like, oh, we can't do stuff like that. There's like little things that they can't do because of regulatory issues.
Safety.
That they're gonna get rid of. But I think a lot of it is going to stick. And I think they are
the Velvet Elvis back seats.
They made such a big deal about it. There's no way that's gonna go away. Ugh. That has to stick around. And I think that for the folks that they built this for, they're going to like it. They're going to look at this and be like, yeah, this is exactly what I want. The rest of us are going to be like, oh, this is a little too much.
As
Like hanging out with Russell Brand, it's a little bit too much. Or hanging out with Diamond Dave is amazing. I don't want to hang out with Diamond David Lee Roth.
Yeah, I feel like, you know what, that is the thing. Like, for the right, like, for 99.9% of humanity, no. But no. For that 0.1%, this car is going to be so...
It's going to be so on brand.
And to the point that they're going to have this car as one of their multitude of cars, and their friends are going to get it and go, oh my gosh, this is like totally amazing. Yes. So people are going to love it.
Yes, people are going to love this vehicle. The people who should love it will likely love it. They're going to sit in the back seat and be like, oh my God, this is amazing.
The rest of us are
just going to like look at it from afar and maybe take a photo. It'll go on Instagram because it looks different from anything else. You know, it's still very much a BMW, but it's very different from a BMW. And it's, when they showed it to us, we were like, oh, okay. So we'll see how it does. I mean, maybe they're only going to sell like, 2,000 a year. Who knows? But if that's what they think they want to sell, then I forgot to ask how many they want to sell.
They only built about 450 or so M1s in total. I mean, it was a pretty rare car. And I'm not sure. Mercedes, AMG, for the last decade has had, dedicated models that weren't part of the standard, they weren't versions of Mercedes vehicles. They've got the GT, the four-door GT. They had the SLS before, those don't sell in huge numbers, but, I would expect, that they'll probably be able to, move, at least 1,000, maybe 2,000 of these things a year.
Oh, yeah.
In certain markets.
Yeah.
And it's funny because BMW is a very, it's a very conservative company. Like, when it comes to a lot of stuff, they're like, whoa, we don't know about that. We don't, about things. And the idea that the board just told them to go nuts was a say. And that's what happened. They're like,
and they did. Yeah,
just do what you like, sort of like do what you want. Have a good time. And they're like, all right, cool. And they did it.
Just go for it. Go. We want to use velvet. Have at it, boys.
So anyway, the XM, I right now we're all like, but I'm telling you, in 20 years at a Cars and Coffee, when there's like one of these at the thing, everyone's going to crowd around it and they're going to take pictures and be like, oh, remember this weird car? All the people on Twitter who are like, this is the ugliest thing ever. They're going to be losing, again, in 20, 25 years, they're going to be at the Cars and Coffee taking pictures and pretending like they loved it from the beginning.
Even though we hated it, that'll be you. Robbie's gonna be like, "Yeah, I got one of these. I always love."
I know exactly what I know who it's for, and I really want to drive one, but I don't want one. It's a little too much. But it is very much like when you say rock star, and I look at it, and you look at all the things, you're like, "Oh yeah, this is exactly what this is."
Okay. Next up. The Toyota GR86, which we have in its incarnations with either Toyota or Subaru BRZ badges, I think we've all been very enthusiastic about since it was launched a few months ago. It's going on sale in Europe, but looks like it's only going to have a 2-year model run in the EU. So for customers that want one, you better get one now, because after that, it will not be available, at least not in its current form, because of tightening emission standards in Europe. The current version with the 2.4 liter boxer 4-cylinder just won't be able to meet the new regulations. Go get one now. I think, has Subaru or Toyota talked about doing a hybrid version of the BRZ or GR86?
I haven't heard anything.
Heard anything about it. I feel like it's going to be a tough, it's already on its own, it's got its building that into that platform and still keeping the driving dynamics of the GR86 and the BRZ is probably going to be tough, because you're going to have to throw you're going to throw a lot of like weight in there, and I think this is such a low, it's kind of a low yield vehicle to begin with, so I don't think they're going to do a lot of work on making the GR86 a hybrid for a lot of, it's a lot of money to make a car that doesn't sell, that only sells to enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. That only sells to 20-year-old kids and us.
And us.
And us, you know. Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice, but yeah. I don't, yeah. So 2 years, get on it, people in the EU.
Okay. Polestar had an event in New York this week. They showed off, they showed off a camouflaged version of the Polestar 3, which is the next product they've got coming out. And they also talked a little bit about the next two follow-on models after that. So the Polestar 3 is coming out, again, about a year from now. Should be out later in 2022. And then the Polestar 4, the Polestar 3 is a larger performance crossover that's based on the same platform as the next generation of the Volvo XC90, which is coming out around the same time. The 3 is going to be built in South Carolina at the same plant where Volvo's currently building cars. And then the 4 will be a smaller crossover coupe thing, which it sounds like they haven't given a lot of detail, but it sounds like it may be based on the same platform as the Polestar 2 and the Volvo XC40, so the Volvo Car Group compact modular architecture. And then the Polestar 5 coming in 2020, the 4 is coming in 23, the 5 is coming in 2024, and that's going to be a high-performance sedan, which I think is going to share the platform with the 3. And that's going to be basically a production version of the Precept, the Polestar Precept concept they showed last year. So what do you, have you two taken a look at the Polestar 3 and, any thoughts on this thing?
I saw the QR code looking vehicle.
It does look like a QR code.
Yeah, like I click on it and it gives me the menu of like the local Mexican restaurant that I love to go to.
Swedish meatballs.
Oh yeah, it might just have Swedish meatballs. I have a funny story I can't say on the radio.
It's actually the menu on the podcast.
But I'll tell you all later. I'm so sorry, audience, that I can't tell you this because it would get someone in a lot of trouble. I like the Polestar. I like the Polestar 1. It's just this weird, wacky halo car that they built, and it was fun to drive. The Polestar 2, I know it has that really high shoulder belt where you have to go and put your arm on the window.
And it looks like the 3 does as well.
Yeah. But I think it's I really like that car. I love driving that car. And then, the Polestar and Volvo. This is a weird thing to say, but their regenerative braking, their one pedal driving is like the best in the business. It's just like you let your foot out, like the first, like within 3 intersections, you're like, oh, I got this. This makes so much sense. I think this is, the evolution of this brand. It's sort of weird though, because it was very much like Polestar is the performance EV brand. And I think maybe they were like, let's do that. Before they decided, oh, by the way, we're going to make everything in Volvo an EV. So I think the 3, from the 4 on, they really have to start sort of differentiating themselves from Volvo, because it gets pretty tough to be like, oh, yeah, you can get the Polestar 2 or you can get the XC40, which has just as much power and it has a little bit more room and it looks a little bit more it looks
conventional.
Conventional, yeah. But then that said, I've seen a lot of Polestar 2s in the Bay Area recently. Like, a lot. Like, someone actually sent me a message who lives here and is like, I've been seeing a lot of Polestar 2s. So they're on to something. I think they're, I think I've seen more of those than I've seen the XC40. So maybe people want something different, which is good.
Yeah, but I can imagine, especially in your area there, that, you look around, Tesla Model 3s are everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
It's the Silicon Valley Camry now.
It's like an all stars, all birds. Yeah, you got an all pair of all birds and a Model 3. That's the Bay Area.
Yeah. So, I can imagine some people say, okay, everybody's got a Model 3 or a Model Y. I'm going to get something different. And, San Jose was one of the first places where Polestar opened up one of their dealerships. It would make sense that there'd be a fair number of them in that area.
Yeah, they have a showroom in the same mall as Lucid.
Ooh.
Yeah. So it's a fun world up here.
It's a fun world. It's a mad, 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 mad,
mad. It's a mad, 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 mad world. I mean, I like the XC90 a lot. I think, you know, if Polestar can sort of like tweak it a little bit so it's a little bit more theirs, then yeah, more. I think it's they're gonna do well as a, you know, sort of a small player in an increasingly larger EV pond.
Well, looking at this, this photo that they released, I like the proportions of it. You know, it's got a nice athletic stance to it. You know, it's got big wheels and, some, fairly pronounced haunches, especially in the rear quarters. Most or increasing number of SUVs now, it's got the same sort of shape to the side glass where it sweeps up at the back, the C-pillar, which is fine. But overall, the shape looks really good, and I think it'll, if the Polestar 2 is anything to go by, it should be a very fun car to drive too.
It's a bit like the Ioniq 5, where the picture you're like, oh, okay, well, this is like it looks small. I'm sure it looks smaller in a picture than it does in real life,
because it does look rather compact.
It looks like a compact. It looks like a quick little subcompact like SUV. They're like, it's the same thing as the XC90. You're like, oh, okay. What?
Yeah, I mean, this thing is probably sitting on 21 or 22 inch wheels, so yeah. It makes it look smaller than it is.
That's the new trick to make things look smaller.
Just put big wheels. All right. I think that's all the news items we've got for this week. We've got some listener emails and questions. So let's start off with Yakov Nimoy, who's written in numerous times in the past. Yakov sent us a fairly long email in response to our previous conversation about using a phone as a key. So I'll go through this here. I was listening to you talk about if it's really worth it to unlock your car with your phone, or if keys really are that much of a hassle. And I thought I'd share my personal vision how this is supposed to work and why we as customers might want these features. When it comes to modern cars, the best experience is a seamless one. Most folks don't want to go anywhere without their phone. So in my opinion, the best experience is where you just walk up to your car, open the door. The car recognizes you by your phone, moves the seat into place, maybe uses some biometrics all inside the car, logs into the infotainment into your user profile, and automatically provides wireless CarPlay or Android Auto as well. The driver just needs to put the car into gear and drive. This is effectively the only action you need to take in order to drive. Essentially, you get in and go. Some cars on the market already do some of these things, and my prediction is we'll see a lot more of this standard and across the board. Plus, when you think how enabling it is for folks who wear outfits that don't have a good place to carry any keys, the complete use of these benefits, complete ease of use benefits everyone, while quietly adding accessibility. If you compare that to the other brands like OXO Good Grips, that kind of fundamental design is the gold standard for making tools useful for as many folks as possible. It's not that we didn't get used to carrying car keys. It's just that things fundamentally change when you take away one thing that folks always had to carry with them. Still, for this to work, technically the phone and the car have to connect directly. Place a smartwatch, perhaps a smartwatch can operate as a backup. Likewise, there needs to be a manual way to get in, which is where biometrics might become interesting technically. When I rented a Renault Megane once traveling in Israel, you find some interesting older vehicles still in rental fleets compared to the U.S. This car came with a plastic box of a key about the size of a Walkman, which you insert into the center console like a CD cartridge setup. That thing was bulky. Moreover, every car in Israel has a 5-button keypad installed where you enter in a code to unlock the starter. This is because of the very high rate of car theft there. When I dropped it off at a different location than where I got it, the folks at the desk had to ask me for the code because they don't keep it on file online between locations. There are a lot of non-US markets where this kind of system could significantly help solve other problems as well. Basically, keys aren't the problem, but when car makers get these systems to work reliably, or not having keys will really change things for the better. So let me say a couple things first. So the 5-button keypad, that's actually a common thing in Europe, basically immobilizers to disable the starter. especially in the UK. They're very common because they have a lot of car theft as well. His comments about, you know, this being seamless and the phone needing to connect directly to the car. You know what also connects directly to your car?
Keys.
Key fob. It doesn't need to go through the cloud either.
I mean, I understand the desire because we want everything. We want our phones to be everything. But also, I still have to carry car keys. So that one extra key isn't – like, I don't have every car key on one key ring. Like, I have a key ring for each car key. And the only car key that's on my main keys is the BRZ. Like, the Jaguar has its own – it sits by itself. The Hyundai sits by itself because I don't drive those cars as often. But having that Subaru key on there isn't really that big of a pain in the ass because all my other keys are there. I have to get back into my house.
I literally normally just have, like, the car key on me, like, because I don't know. It's not that big of a deal and carrying with me. Maybe it's because I'm always carrying press keys, you know, and just have this revolving assortment of keys and have to throw it up on top of the shelf in case it's blocking somebody in my driveway, you know, but I don't mind carrying a key. It's not that
I also think the card, like, I think, was it Tesla has the little card that you
get? Yeah, NFC card.
Yeah, the little NFC card. I think those are fine as well because it's a small card. You can put in your wallet, you can put in your purse, you can put in your whatever.
And those are nice because theoretically, you know, like if I lose my, or if I'm someplace and my car key, my key fob gets wet, I could screw it up and my little credit card situation will still be good, which is great.
You know, Jaguar, and, like, for the iPace, you can get like the a bracelet. Wristband. It's like a Fitbit wristband.
I couldn't get it to work, but you can get it.
He's like, it don't work, but I got one.
They're like, oh, it's for surfing, it's for this, but I couldn't get it to work reliably. And I'm like, I'm not going surfing and then leave with the Jaguar. And then suddenly I can't get back into the Jaguar. Now I don't have a phone or anything. I'm just standing outside of this Jaguar like an idiot. But yeah, like the NFC stuff, I think those work really well. I think the phones, I mean, if it works well, it does. That's great. But the phones are so, I mean, we change them out all the time. People don't remove their information from their phone when they trade it in. You know, you lose your, you know, you don't put your car keys down as much as you put your phone down, like in a restaurant. I was going through TSA this weekend and someone had left their phone in the little bowl. And I was just like, oh, that person's going to have a bad time in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, right.
I know that, you know, we're attached to our phones like there's no tomorrow, but they're also, you know, we trade them out pretty often. And I'm always like in my brain I'm always concerned about like I've traded in my iPhone and now someone gets your iPhone, they can look, oh, this is where they live. Oh, and this is where their car is. Boom. So yeah. As opposed to a key, we're like, well, I got to drive around and just keep pushing the button, and next to every Subaru in the state, or I have this key fob. You know, if you have a Tesla, I have to drive around with this NFC card and just keep running up to Teslas trying to open them. Yeah, I mean, I understand the desire, and it's cool when it works, but at the same time, I'm like.
I totally agree, you know, with Yakov that the experience should be as seamless as possible.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I mean, my wife, for example, you know, she drives the Civic most of the time, and she just leaves the key in her purse, you know, because she takes her purse whenever she goes somewhere, and it's got her phone and it's got her key fob in there, and when she walks up to the car, it automatically unlocks. She just grabs the handle and it's unlocked. And when she walks away from the car, when you get more than 4 or 5 feet away from the car,
click,
it locks. So you don't have to mess with anything. It's there on her all the time anyway. And, you know, to what Yakov said here, you know, about, different outfits that people have, you know, it's like, you know, what's usually smaller than most people's phones? The key fob. Yeah.
Phones are so – I can't comfortably sit down for a long time with my phone in my pocket.
No, I always take my phone out of my pocket.
Like, if I sit down at a restaurant, I'm like, I got to take this out of my – plop.
You can leave your keys stuck in your – yeah, you can leave your keys
stuck in your pocket. Because it's just like a jumble of lines, but the phone has to come out.
Yep, I agree. Concur. I always take my phone out and stick it, like, on the table, not because I want to read it, but because I'm like, I can't sit with this in my back pocket.
And if you're a lady, you can have, like, a nice little clutch. Is that, like, with the small – is that what a small perch is called?
Yes,
a clutch? There you go.
Good job. Nicely done. Yes, that would be a clutch.
Yeah, you have a little clutch.
Very
and then you
good,
have your keys
good.
In your phone.
You could put your keys in your phone in there.
Yeah,
anyway,
and, you know, my wife's purse is, you know, a little bit bigger than a typical clutch, I think, but it's a small purse. I mean, she's got enough room for her phone and her wallet and her keys and her car key. You know, it's like she just, you know, you don't have to do anything. It is a seamless experience already.
Plus the keypads and like on the Ford, that's still kind of
yeah.
Cool.
And, I mean, yeah, I think that's an awesome backup solution.
Yeah, you know, whoopsie.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Obviously, the thing you don't want to do is any system where the phone has to go through the cloud.
Yeah,
and connect to some network somewhere to unlock your car. It absolutely does. Whatever you do, whether it's a phone or, you know, an NFC card or whatever else, or ultra wideband, it needs to be a direct connection. That's essential.
I'm also a big fan, and I do this I'm a big fan of the technology in the device is a single purpose technology. Your phone has like 70,000 purposes. The key fob has one job, and that's to unlock the car and start it. Yeah, and I do that, and like in my bands, like I have the same, like I don't like computers on stage except for the one where I have to DJ. By the way, the computers failed while I was DJing. the software's nice. Crashed second to last song, and I have a whole audience being like, what's going on? But like on stage, I don't want computers on stage. Like, you know, and I know most of the synthesizers and most of the little things that you buy, you know, are mini computers, but they have one job. And if their one job is to play music, they're not going to get messed up by Twitter, like throwing a notification. So that's my other thing about the your phone as a keep up. I mean, I'm sure it's going to get better and people are going to use it in 5 years. You know, everyone's going to have their key, their phone as a key fob. I'll probably still be walking around with the key, though, or at least a little card. I do like the little card thing, the little NFC cards.
I like the card. I'm not
sticking it in my wallet, smack my wallet against the car, getting the card right away.
Yeah, but I mean, ideally, you don't even want to have to take your wallet out and tap it to the car.
Oh, yeah, I get next to the car. Yeah. Rub my butt against it or something. What are you doing? Starting my car. I'm opening my car. Just rubbing my
and
butt against it.
That's how Ross got arrested on the last press drive.
All right. Next up from Michael Sim. Says, my boys and I just completed our day trip to the LA Auto Show. First, can I write how thankful I am that we have an in-person auto show open to the general public? If
Yay.
I may, here are a few thoughts. Number one, the future of the electric vehicle appears both overwhelmingly likely, but also fraught with terror and vaporware.
Fraught with terror.
Terror and vaporware is pretty much, yeah, that's a lot of automakers, really. Yeah.
In addition to the expected offerings from mainline manufacturers like Nissan, Hyundai, Ford, and Toyo Buru, there are EVs from Fisker and Canoe. I picked those two as having more likelihood of achieving actual production given their valuation and seemingly reasonable plans. Of note, I am a Fisker Ocean reservation holder. I think companies such as Indy EV, Mullen, and Imperium have a high possibility of non-existence. Can't disagree with you on that.
No, that's pretty much spot on. Like, you can kind of look at the EV, like, world and see which ones are likely going to make it. I think Lucid, Rivian, Fisker, I think those are three that are going to do well. Canoes, well, I don't know. But, you know, it's tough for Canoe because, you know, they have, now they're going up against GM with Bright Cove?
Bright Drop.
Bright Drop. Sorry, Bright Cove's the old video platform. Bright Drop. So that's going to be tough for them. But I think, you know, but then you look at all these other EV makers and you're like, oh, you have a nice idea. It's hard to make a car. It's impossible to make 100. It is a Herculean feat to do that at scale. So good luck.
Yeah. All right. Second point from Michael. Contrary to my current EV usage as daily driver as a Tesla Model 3 and possible future with a Fisker, my future potential cars on my list include two V8 sedans, although both are underpinned by similarly antiquated structures. I was largely unimpressed by the Lexus IS500, while the Dodge Charger 392 Scat Pack continues to carry the charm of an old but still relevant celebrity. Well, Michael, if you have any plans to get that Charger, I would do it sooner rather than later because Dodge has already said that end of 2023, the Charger and Challenger in their current form are going away, and they're going to be replaced by EVs. So if you want...
I wonder if they'll corner any better.
Well, they'll have a lower center of gravity.
Oh, that's true.
Cornering's for wimps.
Listen, the Charger and the Challenger do exactly what they're supposed to do.
And they
loud,
do it
loud in a straight line. Well. Yeah, loud and in a straight line.
Yeah, they're classic American muscle cars.
Yes.
Yep.
Point three. Why did Toyota lock the doors on the GR86, but Subaru invited Joe Blow like me to sit in the new BRZ and the WRX to boot?
Okay, so the Toyota booth was very odd. They had a lot of cars, but everything was locked, and it was it was very large too. It covered a lot of. They had a lot of real estate there, and instead of showing the BX4Z on their like sort of main stage, they had the Tundra. And I understand like money wise, that's the car you want to sell because big trucks make a lot of money.
Plus that's what they're going to have available to sell.
Yeah,
you know.
And then they had their new technological next generation, the future, like in a corner in a little like circle thing.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you go over to the Subaru booth. Subaru booth is like it's like summer camp over there. They have they've recreated the outdoors. They have this crazy floor, and they're like, yeah, you want to sit in our new Solterra? Go for it. You want to sit in? Yeah, here, pet a dog. It just felt like Subaru was so much.
Pet a dog.
Subaru was like inviting everyone in with Toyota's like. This is our stuff. You can look at it or not. Whatever, man.
Toyota's not a big fan of EVs anyway. So, you know, it's like, we're going to do this because we have to. But, you know, we don't really want you to buy this.
Meanwhile, Subaru's like, love is electric. Like, they're just going all in. It's the same car. But but they stuck all the Subaru things on it. They had the roof rack on top, and they had all. I was putting my hands above my head.
He's
for the
flailing
listeners.
Above his head. I'm like, I don't know what that's supposed
What's
to
this
be.
What's thing? Right? What's happening? What's going on? Their crown.
They did Subaru things with the Subaru.
They did Subaru things with the Subaru. I was only there for half of the first press day, and so I don't know if they actually put a dog in the car, but I'm sure they did at some point. At some point, a dog was sitting in that car because
of
it's Subaru.
It was.
But yeah, I think Subaru just. I think overall, like their LA Auto Show experience was more like, come on, let's hang out, let's have a party. You want to roast some marshmallows? Where Toyota just felt like very sterile and like eh.
Just don't look down at the floor in the Subaru booth, you know.
Yeah. Like weirdly, like woo.
Very disorienting.
What are they pumping into the air here? Woo!
Volvo and Lincoln have done a magnificent job with their interiors. Both manufacturers have mastered a mix of clean design, tasteful materials, and useful buttons.
Oh yeah, totally. The Lincoln, yes. Like you get in Lincoln, the current gen like lineup of Lincolns, you just get into them after like the last one. You're like, oh my gosh, this is so nice.
Yeah, especially when you compare it to the Fords sitting next door.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that have the same underpinnings, but they feel and look so completely different.
Yeah, they do. They feel so much different. And, of course, Volvo is just like, hey, we're going to make everything very minimalistic, but also, like, here's the things.
Beautiful.
You need.
Very Swedish.
And hey, do you like crystals? Because.
We got crystal.
Crystal shifters.
Crystal shifters.
All right. Mike says, I think I will stop here. Thanks for always being a source of excellent industry information and fun banter. Happy Thanksgiving. And happy belated Thanksgiving to you too, Michael. Next up, from Gupta AJ, he asks, stoplight drag racing in a full-size truck, Ford or Toyota hybrid? I think one of us
Raptor.
Responded back, don't. We do not endorse stoplight drag racing. That is not a thing you should be doing.
It is bad.
It's
so
very bad. It's
because
absolutely not.
I think people think that their car is just going to go into a straight line. And I think there are tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of YouTube videos that show cars that the person just try to take off really fast and go in a straight line. And then anything like a little bit of oil on the asphalt, like tires, like maybe one's a little bit lower than the other. Things get hairy really quick. And now you're off into a ditch or you're off hitting someone else's car.
You're off, on a public street where there's people and buildings and other cars and
people
and
walking and children and puppies and birds and whatnot. If you're looking, if you want to do something like, I want to go fast in a straight line, you go out to the middle. You know what? You can probably go to your local racetrack. Like Sonoma here, the Sonoma track, they have a quarter mile day where you can go as a human with your regular car and you can do a quarter mile on a nice racetrack where people can see what you're doing and there's like medics and emergency crews there. And so
people
help
you when you go sideways.
Yeah. And people help you if you go sideways. And if that's what you want to do, Ford Raptor.
That said, he did reply after that. So he's just looking for traction and acceleration. So, assuming that you're going to use these in an appropriate manner, you know, at your local drag strip, as
opposed
to...
Now that we've ranted.
Now that we've ranted, because I don't want...
As opposed to, from a stoplight. Which of these two, would you say for, traction and acceleration? It's been, I don't know, probably 10 months since I drove an F-150 hybrid. Just drove the Tundra hybrid a couple of weeks ago. But spec-wise, they're pretty close. The Tundra is rated at 437 horsepower, 583 foot-pounds. The Ford is, I think, about 450 horsepower, about 560-70 foot-pounds. So, I mean, they're in the same ballpark. Have either of you driven the two of them closer together in
no.
time?
Enough. I haven't driven the Toyota. I've only driven the F-150, which I didn't feel like drag racing because it's a truck. I've driven the Raptor. And I'm like, oh wow, this goes really fast, and it's, but it's also a truck, which always feels like why that's not a thing I want to do in a truck. I want to go get some mulch or some turtles that are split in two and made out of concrete.
Big cement turtles.
Yeah, I want to be able to haul something. I want to haul, not ass, but like everything else, like a trailer and a boat and other things. But I mean, people want to go fast in a big truck.
Oh. I mean, if you
should be the title of this episode, not ass, but everything else.
I want to haul something.
Yeah. I think, if what you're really looking for, is maximum acceleration in a truck, either, get yourself a Ram TRX or... next spring, an F-150 Lightning.
Lightning's
going to have more power and more torque than either of these trucks. It's going to be significantly quicker than either of these trucks. There's also, there's the Hummer EV, which is also a lot more expensive.
Yeah, and quicker. Very heavy.
But in terms of Tundra versus F-150 hybrid, whichever one is less offensive to your eyes, I would say.
There you go.
Spec-wise, there's not really a whole lot to
you get. You get the fancy stuff, tailgate stuff at the Ford, and you can get the
plug-in Pro Power on board.
Yeah, the Pro Power on board is awesome. We played Mario Kart in the middle of a field with it. So.
And the fancy table that you can flip down by the gear shift.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Oh, and the fancy table you fold down.
Yeah. Perfect for your cookies.
Perfect for your cookies.
Or burritos, which I've eaten. Yeah. I'm like, oh, I need to eat a burrito. Or you can work. I put my computer on there and did some work, but mostly I just ate burritos with it.
There you go. All right. And I think we have one last question, and I think there's really only one of the three of us that is suitable to answer this one. This is from Dan Vesma. Says, having just got our first rescue puppy and our first old X-Type Jaguar, any tips for happy motoring with four-legged friends?
Okay, so first off, we did have a cover in the back, but when we stuck the cover in the Kona, and now we don't have a cover, and it's got, we got this leather interior. The dogs love it. What's nice, but I will say that the door opens wide enough for the dogs to jump in and out. There's two of them. One's a German Shepherd. One's a little miniature German Shepherd. They have enough room. They both lay down. It's not as much room as, say, a wagon or an SUV would afford them. But, yeah. And, you know what? The big one, the big German Shepherd, he likes to stick his head out of the sunroof. So, open the sunroof. Nice. But you do have to be careful when you have a new dog and you have in the back of the car. Because they want to be with you because they love you. They will keep trying to get into the front seat. So what we ended up having to put is the cage. So now it's like the dogs have been arrested. So we have a little cage.
They feel like they're riding around in a cop car.
Yeah. It feels like they're riding around in the back of a cop car, especially when they're younger. And then as they sort of learn, we don't have the cage in the Kona because they sort of know that they can only come up so far. So they stick their head back and out, and you pet them and you tell them they have to go back, and they do. But yeah, for the first one, I would probably get the get a seat cover. Those are $15-$20. Get one of those little cages. It's going to be a pain in the ass if you ever want people sitting back there because you got to take the cage out every time. But it, you know, it's going to be helpful because it's going to keep your puppy from trying to get into the front seat and sitting in your lap while you're trying to turn or drive, or you just, you know, it's cute when the puppy's licking your face. It's less cute when the puppy's licking your face and it distracts you and now you're in a car accident. So yeah, get a little cage, get a little seat cover. Yeah, the dogs really like the Jaguar. It's great for just around town stuff.
And ideally, you know, even better than the cage, you know, is actually, you know, buckling in your pooch.
Yeah, use the little latches things.
Yeah, you know, you can, you know, at any pet store, you can usually buy, you know, little, it's like a short little lead, you know, that's got, you know, one side plugs into the seatbelt buckle and, you know, the other side latches onto the dog's harness or collar, preferably a harness when they're riding around.
You know,
spread the load around, not just a regular neck collar. You know, and that's going to be a lot safer for you and for the dog. You know, if something does happen, you know, even if it's not, you know, if somebody hits you, you know, if the dog is restrained, you know, there's a lot less chance of them being injured, and you know, you don't want your puppy getting hurt.
So. Yeah, definitely the harness. Don't if you just put your dog in the back seat with the leash, mm-hmm. While you're driving like a short distance or whatever, like you put the leash on a harness, just because you don't want that leash getting stuck on something and it's around their collar and the, you know, then the dog's like trying to escape and it's hurting itself or it gets hurt during an impact. And so, yeah, man, that turned into a downer from fun, like car thing to like, okay, this is what you,
well, yeah, I mean,
keep your puppy safe.
You want your dog to have fun in the car, but also be safe. And yeah, you know, my dogs, you know, they love riding around with the top down, you know, just like Nico. Nico's the big one, right?
Bowie's the big one. Nico's Bowie's the little one.
Just like Bowie likes to stick his head out the sunroof, you know. They like riding around in the Miata with the top down. You know,
having
stick
a party
their head out over the side there in the breeze. Yeah, it's great.
It's a dog party.
Yeah, absolutely. Dogs and cars are great. Well, most dogs and cars.
My dog hates cars, so aww. That's why I'm being quiet. My puppy doesn't like them.
Yeah, well, my one of my neighbors has a collie that also doesn't like going in the car either. She gets very upset tummy when she has to go in the car. Gets very agitated.
If we are going on a long drive, we rent a minivan for the dogs because it's got a low, like, you know, it's easy to get into. There's a lot of space. You can put other people in the car and still the dogs still have like an entire play area. And, you know, when they're sitting in the car, like initially, they're like, yeah, my head's out the window. And then after a while, they're like, all right, now what? And then they have like a lot of room to lay down. We put blankets, like we put a cover down, then we put like comforters down.
Yeah. No,
the dogs
great.
Are living the life here at the Baldwin household is what I'm saying.
All right. That's it for this week. Thank you all very much. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Da, 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 da. I gotta go take pictures of that Pathfinder.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.